Hello, Sobertown. Welcome to the Sobertown Podcast. Let's jump on that sober train and ride right into the incredible, wonderful world of sobriety. And this morning, we have a young sober warrior who is just doing all kinds of amazing things in these sober spaces. And I want to welcome Shayna. Welcome to Sobertown.
Thank you so much. That was quite the introduction. Mine isn't that cool. I need to get a cool one like that. Riding into Sobertown and everything.
Boom, riding the sober train, right?
I love that. Hi, my name is Shayna. That's it. Go ahead.
No, go ahead and introduce yourself and tell us a little about you.
Yeah, so my name is Shayna. I have been in sobriety finally, continuously for almost 3 years now. I think it was like 860, 70 something days the other day. I finally counted, and I hadn't counted almost this entire time because, as you'll hear in kind of my story, I had gone through so many relapses and started over so many times that it really started to make me super discouraged. Like every time I would mess up, it would be like, oh, there went all that time. So at some point, I really decided that, like, even if I messed up, that sober time still counted, and I was just going to keep marching forward. And I really did not count or track my days for a few years. And then the other day, or actually like a few months ago, everybody was like, what day are you on? And all these posts. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to do it because I'm actually feel secure and good now. And that was a really, really good feeling. So I'm at like 870 something days.
Huge, huge congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you.
So you're going to share your recovery story with us, which I find fascinating. And I saw one of your reels in the Sobertown Facebook group, and I was like, wow, man, this girl's been through a lot. So go ahead, start your story where you would like.
So I guess I'll start with, because I think this is where I recall it starting. For me, was when I was super young, probably like maybe like 10, 11-ish. I was always super shy. And, you know, my friends would be really outgoing, that type of thing. And, you know, my friend had a brother and all his friends would be at her house and we would all sit there and everybody like wanted to date them and liked that, you know, because it was the older brother and all his friends. And I was like somewhere hiding in a corner all the time. Like, I was so shy to any, like, even if we were eating or something, I didn't want to eat in front of boys or like, you know, everybody else was like, what is your problem? Like, she's so awkward, right? And I am a very social, friendly person, but it was almost like this freeze. Like when I would get nervous, I would freeze and I couldn't talk. I would not remember things that were regular, like I should just know like words, or it was like my whole brain would shut down, right? If I was nervous. And I just remember that very well. So I would be in school and I would know how to like spell things, but the teacher would have you stand up and spell something and I would just stand there because I was like, I can't breathe, right? And now I definitely don't know how to spell it, right? So I just recall that. And finally, I was getting like super bad grades and stuff like that. And I had like a bad attitude problem, right? Because I hated being called out. Like they'd ask you, they'd go around the room and you'd have to have the answer. You'd have to read in your place. Like I would sit there and read and read and read, figure out how far I was into it. Like I didn't want to do any of that in front of people. So I couldn't even think about learning because I was so stressed about like, what if I get it wrong? Or what if he's going to call me out loud, right? So I would get in trouble. I would skip. I would go smoke on the bridge. I would do all types of stuff. And my mom got me this therapist. And my parents were super, super strict. And my mom got me this therapist. And I talked to her about like how, first of all, I was never allowed to like go anywhere or do anything. And second of all, like, I felt like I couldn't pay attention or figure things out in school. So she ended up saying that she was pretty sure that I had, and she sent me to a doctor, and I went to a doctor, and I just have to point out that I'm 38 years old, right? So I was probably about 12 at this time, and Adderall, Ritalin, things like that, were not really well known then. Like now it's pretty popular, right? So you know what it is, you know what's going on, you know it's a like controlled substance, right? But then, because this was like 20 something years ago, 30 something years ago, it wasn't, right? So the doctor just told me take the medication, and if I had ADD, it would work. And if I didn't, it wouldn't do anything. Don't worry about it. So I carried these little pills around with me, and I was a little bit chunky. I was super shy and I was real bad in school. And I will tell you, like the first pill that I took, it was like God himself came down and fixed every problem I had. I got skinny within like 2-3 months. I was like 90 pounds. I'm like 5'7". I was super confident. I don't know if that came from like weight loss or, well, I got like that little adrenaline push, right? Like I was, all of a sudden I was getting straight A's. It was like everything had changed for me. And I would just carry my pills around with me. And I thought if one made me feel good, if I was tired, I would just take another one, right? And my parents, because people sometimes will ask about your parents or whatever, they didn't know. And I honestly, as stupid as it sounds, I was 12. I just thought when I'm tired, this wakes me up. When I, you know, I'm just going to take one more or whatever. And that was how it all kind of started. So by the time I got to high school, I was probably supposed to take two, and I was probably taking like maybe 3-4 a day or something. And I just realized that like on the weekends, my friends would want to drink, right? Or we all smoked because it was the cool thing. Well, they would smoke like 3-4 cigarettes in the afternoon after school. I would smoke like a pack and a half. Like I was so hyped up. And then we would drink on the weekends and everybody'd want to party and we'd be looking for somebody to buy. And if we couldn't find anybody, to everybody else, it was no big deal. I was like dying. Like I was like, no, we need to drink. Like I want to drink. And then I started feeling like that, like during the week even. So I really knew there's a lot of people in the world who struggle with whether or not they had an addiction, whether or not they were an alcoholic. I, at the time, I would have thought like an alcoholic is like somebody you see that's like homeless or like the stereotypical thing. But I definitely knew from a very young age that I drank different than everyone else. I wouldn't have said that I was an alcoholic at that time or that I knew that, but I knew that I wasn't normal like everybody else, right? I knew something was wrong because I would definitely be focused on that all the time. So all my siblings were about 10 years older than me. So my sisters both had kids already. And one of my sisters, she kind of drank a lot and I would babysit for her all the time. She had two kids and she was divorced. She was drinking a lot, doing a little bit of coke here and there. And she just wasn't taking good care of her kids. So I was always there and I was always taking care of her kids, right? And this was probably about 15, 16. And then I would get away with like, well, if I babysit for you, then you got to buy me alcohol and I got to be able to have my boyfriend spend the night. And I'll tell you, like, I have amazing, amazing parents, but I always, and my dad is like my favorite person in the world, so I don't know why I had such boy issues, but I always was looking for love. I always was in a long-term relationship. I wanted a baby since the time I was super young. Like, I have no idea why. I had the same boyfriend for 2 years in high school, and I ended up pregnant at 16. So at this time, I have basically I'm taking care of my sister's kids and then I'm having my own kid, right? And it kind of was my way of, first of all, staying at my sister's house was my way of drinking during the week when I wasn't allowed to go anywhere either, but I was allowed at my sister's house because they didn't really know what was going on. So I would have my boyfriend spend the night there. I was drinking all the time, but then I was pregnant. So I decided to move in with my boyfriend at the time, who was my daughter's dad. And I moved into there at 16, and my nieces really came with me because my sister was doing like super bad. So she ended up getting, basically, she was in a bar and somebody put something in her drink and she was gang raped. So at the time when I was having my daughter, I had her kids, and then I was sober during my pregnancy, but afterwards I was trying to be a mom to all these children. I was young. I was in a super bad, bad relationship. So I would really just like wake up in the morning and start drinking wine, because like wine doesn't count. And I would make it like half wine, half water. And I would just drink and keep like a steady buzz throughout the day. And I was really like, I guess, proud of being able to like carry this household at like such a young age and all this stuff. But it was just getting overwhelming. The person that I had my daughter with, I don't want to say baby daddy, but that's what comes to mind. Anyways, well, he was drinking all the time, and he was not super physically abusive, but like would break down the doors in the house, would be like falling down the stairs. Like I would have to call his mom and dad all the time. Like, can you come get him? Like he's freaking out. He'll like spit on me or like do stuff like that. Right. And I just like kind of drank myself to like, like everything quiet, just leave me alone. And I really didn't want like my parents to know that I was going through that or all these things, right? So I definitely continued just drinking for a long time and also taking this medication. So I got to a point where I broke up with my boyfriend at the time, and I moved into, basically, I graduated high school, and the day that I graduated, I signed up for college and moved into like family housing. And I started going to school, and I wasn't really going. I just wanted a place to live. So I was drinking, had my kids, and my sister was, she lived in like the family housing too. And because all this stuff had happened with her, and I knew the people who had did it, I would like get drunk and go to like one of the guys' houses and be like throwing rocks, and like they'd call the cops, and just like I was acting like super erratic. Like I remember one time I had got in a fight with the person that I was seeing at the time when I lived in these houses, and I came home to argue with him, and I woke up in the morning and there was a police officer knocking on my door. And he was like, are you going to like move your car? Your car is on and it's parked backwards in the middle of the street. And like, it's like running with the keys in it. And I was like, oh, okay. Okay. Yeah. I just had to stop here real quick. Like really, I had been in bed all night, like passed out. Right. So it was like stuff like that. So I definitely 100% knew that I had an issue. And the thing is that the Adderall really allowed me to think that I could drink like, I don't know, like a man, basically. Like I would drink everybody under the table because I had all this energy. And at the time I thought it was cool, right? Like I thought, you know, I'm a girl and I can drink more than everybody. And, but then it just got to a point where I was just drunk all the time. Like I was trying to go to work and I was hungover all the time. And I ended up meeting someone and kind of just like fell in love with him, and he moved in with me. We were together for like a year, I think, and I ended up getting pregnant. So now I'm 20 with two kids, and I moved to Bloomington, Illinois with him, and that relationship lasted for about 10 years, and it was, I will say that he was my first love, and I don't regret staying, but I definitely stayed through him having two children with someone else. Just a lot of like semi-physically abusive things, definitely verbal abuse. We would fight. I would get drunk and we would fight, like because he was cheating on me, I would be trying to, you know, beat him up, and he would be trying to kind of beat me up or kind of maybe just keep me at bay. I don't know. It was just such a toxic, toxic environment. And I'll say that my self-esteem really, like, I didn't have great self-esteem to begin with, but my self-esteem really died in that relationship. Like, it was, I loved him so much. And like, I won't say that he didn't love me because, well, he's passed away now. He passed away probably about 3.5 years ago. And we had even talked and were super close before he passed away. And he always said, like, I wish I would have done things differently. And we were super young, right? And he was just kind of a dog. But but I do think that he wasn't trying to, like, hurt me like he did. I think he just was a dog, right? And I don't know, like, staying in that and having my kids see that and just continuing to go downhill, it was like, he would look at me and be like, oh, like, you're drinking again. You're disgusting. But then he kind of liked when I would drink because I wasn't as aware when he wanted to go out and do other things, right? So it was this, you know, when they say that some people don't necessarily want to see you get better, it was kind of something like that. Like, he kind of liked me in a position where I was sick because then I needed him and I had to continue to stay, right? So that went on for a really long time. And basically my alcoholism just got worse until I finally got to a point where we had gotten an argument and he pulled my hair and, like, tried smashing my face on the ground. And somebody called the cops. I don't know who called the cops, but when they came, he was like, well, she's drunk, so, like, she's got to go to jail, right? And, like, he just thought because he didn't drink, they would believe him. Well, they took him to jail and he got a domestic violence. And while he was gone, my dad came and talked to me and was just like, listen, like, you need to get out of here. I'll pay for you to go, like, on a vacation somewhere. I'll pay for you to go somewhere. You just need to get help. And I ended up going to, I just said, I just want to go to rehab. Imagine that. You get offered a vacation and you're like, can I go to rehab? So my parents stick me in this thing because they were, like, complete church freaks at the time. They stick me in this thing and it was in Rockford, Illinois. It was called Reformers Unanimous. And it is basically it's like a Baptist place for women and men where you're, like, separated. And it was 6 months long and you had to wear dresses down to your ankles and, like, t-shirts that were long, loose, and lots. If you swore, you had to, like, you would get some kind of mark and you would have to, like, scrub the floors with a toothbrush for an hour for each time you got in trouble. Like, it was pretty intense. And at that time, my first daughter's dad actually filed for custody because I had left to go to treatment. So I was like, okay, here I am getting sober. I'm going to lose custody of my daughter. Like, you wait until I'm getting help to try to file for custody. That's cool. And so just all this stuff was kind of, like, piling on, but I ended up staying through treatment. I did win custody of my daughter. The judge ended up saying that, like, I chose to go to treatment on my own and she wasn't going to punish me for that. And basically he got, like, more parenting time, and that was cool. That was great, but it was crazy because I had spent 6 months in treatment and I went home and a week later, so they had taught me in treatment, like, you're married, you have to go fix it. And I was like, okay, like, I left there really, and I learned a lot of things from there and I really do appreciate my time there, but they really had me thinking, like, you have to fix it no matter what. And, like, I went right back home and I was drunk within a week. So after sitting for 6 months in treatment and being, like, drunk a week later, I really was like, okay, I really am just, like, a piece of shit, right? Like, and then I think maybe a month after that, I ended up having heart surgery. I had emergency heart surgery. So I was, like, 27 years old. And that was due to a mix of the drinking and using, right? So basically, I woke up from that and they were like, no more stimulants. And I was like, okay. So I stopped that.
So they related this directly to your drinking and the Adderall then?
Yeah. Yep. So I woke up and I was like, okay, no more Adderall. Cool. Well, what happened when I took the Adderall away, or when they took the Adderall away, was I was literally like a fall down blackout drunk. Like before, no matter how much I drank, I was awake. When they took that away, it was a whole different animal, because I was like doing things that I had no idea that I was doing. I was saying things that didn't make any sense. Before, I was much more able to hide how much I was drinking, and now there was none of that. There was none of that at all. Like, I really just became a bad alcoholic, which I was before that, but it was just noticeable now. So I ended up finally, after a while, getting a divorce, and I decided to move. My parents had a place in Texas. I decided to move there just because the town was getting small, and I was like, if I stay here, I'm gonna go to jail. Like, I was fighting with all the girls he was, you know, dating and all this stuff, and I was like, I don't got time for this. So I ended up moving to Texas, and it just so happened that there was an opening at this treatment center, and it was one of the largest, best treatment centers in the world. And I was like, I'm going to apply and I'll never get this job. Well, I ended up getting it. So what did I think? This is going to be a perfect time for me to get sober. I'm going to get sober just by, like, you know, being there and helping these girls, right? Well, that lasted for about 10 years. I was a supervisor there, recovery advocate. And first of all, I really had times of sobriety. I really loved all of those girls. I really loved my job, but I was definitely lying to myself and lying to everybody else about being continuously sober. And I could not get it together, no matter how much I tried. I like had a head full of knowledge and a belly full of liquor. There probably isn't a line in the big book that I couldn't quote you. I've been to meetings probably 5 times a week for 8 years, right? And I could not stop drinking. So I believe that that kind of made things worse too, that I had like all of these friends who didn't even know who I was, right? Like, they didn't know I drank. They didn't know my kids were like begging me to like stop drinking and to stop, you know, taking care of me half the time. It was just a really rough time. And me and my girls were so, so close, but it definitely was a relationship where like they were more of the parent, right? They were always looking out for me, taking care of me, and it wasn't easy on them. So I ended up getting pregnant there. I did not stay with him. I was at work and I got in an accident. So my leg got ran over while I was pregnant. I was like 5 months pregnant. And I spent the last 5 or 4 months of my pregnancy in the hospital. So that was kind of like a big deal around that time too, was like, okay, I'm having my third baby. I'm alone. Like, what are you doing that you always have to be like looking for someone to love you, and you literally keep picking the same person, right? Same person, different body. Like, you shouldn't have got divorced in the first place, right? That's how it was starting to feel. And I don't know, I had my baby and I started to like heal and get better. I continued working at the treatment center. And at some point, we got news that my ex-husband had passed away. And I really thought that I was over that whole relationship. I probably had been sober at that time for about 3 weeks. Like, I felt like I was doing good. And then I just wasn't, right? Like, the last time I remember, I was calling work and I told her something about like, I didn't feel good or I couldn't get there or something. And I was literally on the toilet drunk. And she was like, are you okay? Like, you don't sound okay. And I was like, bye. That was it. I just hung up on her. So I knew my job was done, right? And they called me from there basically and were like, hey, like, we can get you into treatment. Like, don't worry about it, whatever. So my daughter, who was probably like 13 at the time, and that was her dad, ended up going to like his funeral, all that stuff with my dad. And I ended up going to treatment. So I think it was like, and this was probably, this is my second time in treatment. So I think that was a huge eye opener too. Like, at the time when I should have been there for my daughter, like, I couldn't I couldn't even face things. I ended up drinking again, even though I was sober when it happened. And I just felt really like bad. But then again, I kind of put it on like I didn't want to be there for the funeral, and I didn't want to like see like his girlfriend at the time and like all this stuff. So I was like, well, I didn't want to go. So at least I got out of going. So I was in treatment for, I think, 30 days. And then I went to sober living for 30 days and I did not stay sober. So I talked to my mom and dad, and this was during kind of like COVID and stuff. And they were like, you need to just like come home. And I was like, ugh, no, like that freaking town that I hate it there. It's so small. There's nothing there. Everyone knows everybody's business. And I ended up going home, packed everything in my little car, and we went home. And I ended up getting sober within a few months of being home. I got on the Vivitrol shot, first of all, and that was a super huge help as far as like cravings. I used to not really believe in MAT or medication assistance, but I had tried for so long to get sober that I just didn't care anymore. I was like, I don't care what anybody thinks, what anybody says. I had always been a huge 12-stepper. So it was like, you do this and this is all you do. Well, I love the 12 steps, but it didn't work for me by itself, right? Like I had to do other things, including therapy. And when I got on the Vivitrol shot, it gave my brain a space. I'll just say that before, when I would think about drinking, I was really drunk before I even like felt like I had time to like, you know, people say play the tape through. I felt like there was none of that. And once I got on the shot, it was like, okay, I would really like to drink right now, but it's not good. Like this will happen. And I could do that. So it ended up really helping me. I have been on it for almost 3 years now. I actually, like a year ago, went and asked my doctor, like, can I get off? Like, I'm done now. She's known me like my whole life. And she was like, no, thank you. She was like, honestly, there is no like really bad side effects to being on it. It also helps with anxiety and it's working for you. So I don't see why I would take you off. So she kind of said that I would stay on it for life. And I don't really have a problem with that because it's kind of been, I don't want to say a lifesaver, but I will say that it was a big turning point for me, was getting assistance with cravings. So
that was called Vivitrol?
Yes. And it's almost like naltrexone, like the pill, except for it's a shot. So you can't just choose to not take it.
And that gave you the ability to pause and think through any of the consequences and play the tape forward.
Yeah. And I had never in my life since I was 12 years old had that feeling where I was like, okay, it almost felt like I had done it before I even thought about it, right? And when people would say, you know, think about the consequences or think about your, I would be like, I did, and I was still drunk. Like, I don't know what happened or why. And, you know, a lot of people talk a lot about being ready or like willpower. I swear to you that I wanted and worked to get sober for almost that whole 10 years that I lived in Texas, and it like was not possible. And I don't think it was a lack of trying. I don't think it was a lack of willpower. I think that my brain really had been hijacked by alcohol, and the shot really gave me a chance to like slow it all down. And as soon as I took that, I have never used or drank again. And I'm not saying medication by itself, right? But I think had I not done that, I'd still be drinking.
And let's talk about that 10 years a little bit, because you waking up every day, seeing these other people getting sober, finding their way into recovery, and you're not being able to do that, that just really had to hammer down on you like hopelessness.
So hopeless. I'll say that the last time that I drank was not even the worst time or like the worst consequences or even the drunkest I've been probably even that week. But it was more the fact that I kept thinking like, I don't like how I feel when I'm sober. Like, I don't want to live like that. And I also can't live like drunk anymore. Like, and it was the first time in my life that I really felt like suicidal, right? Like, I really was like, I do not want to do this anymore. And I don't see a way out. Like, I don't understand how people, even sober people, and what I didn't understand about sobriety is like how I felt in those little stints of like 4 weeks sober is not how I feel at almost 3 years sober. Like, your body heals, and it doesn't take 3 weeks after you drink for 20 years. It takes a minute. Like, it took me 6 months to a year to feel normal. And I think had I known that, it would have been a little different too, because I honestly thought, like, I hate life when I'm sober and I hate life when I'm drinking. Like, I wasn't one of those people that was out like partying, living my best life, having fun. You won't see pictures of me that many, right? You'll see me by myself. I was drunk in my room, throwing up in Walmart bags. Like, that's what happened. There was no glamorous, fun partying. There was none of that ever, really, since like college.
You just hit on something that happens to a lot of people where they're miserable sober. What got you out of that to where you're thriving in sobriety? What was that click moment or whatever it was?
So definitely after I got the Vivitrol shot, I started going back to AA meetings, and I was in a different place, right? And this meeting that I started going to, I ended up meeting like friends that I really enjoyed. I started dating someone. I'm married now. He's in sobriety. That was another thing, is that I really think that I was always looking for love and I was always trying to date, and I couldn't date sober because I was like such an anxious mess, right? So if I was going to find somebody, I was going to have to do it drunk. And meeting somebody who was sober and like really had that first and forefront, which most people say not to date in early sobriety. So I won't, what do you call it, say that that's what you should do. But I will definitely say that like being with someone who had the same goal as me was like refreshing, because he wanted it just as much as I wanted it, if that makes sense. And we were able to build something together. Like, he got his children back. I was able to like be a better mom. We got a home together. We both got amazing jobs. You know, when I met him, he was like just getting sober, and he was like not working or not doing anything. And I was like, you know, girls stalk people. And I was stalking his Facebook, and I was like, hey, like, you used to be a regular motherfucker. Like, you had a job, you had a lunch bag and everything. How come you're just sitting here doing nothing? And he was like, oh yeah. Like, and he went and got a good job. And like, he, you know, he kind of forgot who he was too before drugs and alcohol. And I think we kind of did that for each other. You know, they say get a plant in early sobriety. I killed two plants. I have a dog and a husband who I love greatly that I got in early sobriety. So I didn't do it the regular way, but it's definitely worked for me. But I will say what made me happy: community, like 100% community, and finding a life in sobriety, like not just sitting around, making sure that I'm like out doing something. You know, like, I hate exercising with my whole entire heart, but like, sometimes you have to like make yourself go for a walk or like do things to get, you know, dopamine in your body and things like that. So yeah, I would just say community. And especially like now there's this whole Instagram land and Facebook land where everybody can really like communicate and support each other. And that was huge.
When you were working at that rehab, you were wearing masks and you weren't even able to be who you really are. Now in your recovery, you've taken these masks off and you're thriving. And you're doing it all different ways. You've started a podcast. You've started a Facebook group. You're a sober coach too, correct?
Yeah. And I think that, so during the last almost 3 years, I didn't do anything obviously related to sobriety, because when I moved home, I decided I was just going to work on myself, which is what I should do, right? But about 3 months ago, I kept getting this feeling like I miss working with women. And I'm sober now. Why wouldn't I? You know what I mean? I really do have a passion for working with people. And I think being able to tell people like who are actually hopeless, like I was, who look at other people and they're like, how? Like, how are they doing that? I could never do that. And really see that like you can do that. You can be or do whatever you want to be or do. And it really is just getting out there and doing it. I don't want to say fake it till you make it. But once I got sober, like so much started to change. You know, I had somebody who commented on an Instagram post that I made the other day, and I haven't gotten many negative comments, but this one kind of stuck out to me because I really felt her pain, right? She actually said, people like you and other girls in the sobriety community get people all excited. Like if you quit drinking, you're just going to be so happy, rainbows and butterflies. I quit drinking 20 years ago and I still hate my life and myself. And I really felt that because I've been sober and not liked who I was or what I was doing. And there is such thing as being a dry drunk, right? So stopping alcohol isn't going to save or fix every single problem you have, right? But adding alcohol on is going to make it 15 times worse. So I will never say that like sobriety is rainbows and butterflies. I definitely have had my share of issues during sobriety, even depression and anxiety during sobriety. Like those things don't go away. But I'll tell you, they don't feel anything like they feel when I put a fifth of vodka on top of it. Like I'm able to actually work through depression or panic attacks, and they're not even as prevalent as they were before. So does it fix it automatically? No. Like you have to do some work, but I don't feel anything, and this is me personally, I don't feel anything like I felt then.
Yeah, because you've tried to quit drinking, you felt miserable, but now in your recovery, you're actually doing things and you're getting involved and you found a whole new life inside of recovery. Giving back, I think, is a huge deal with that. It kind of like restores the soul type thing, doesn't it?
It does. It definitely does. And I think even being in like a relationship that's super healthy and like friendships that are super healthy, those are things that I never had before, right? Like my parents kind of had a decent amount of money when I was growing up. And like, even my friends always wanted something from me, right? Like there was ulterior motives all the time. And like, especially as we got into everybody I was hanging out with was drinking and using, you know, it was convenient to have me around to do things for them. And just my relationships were really bad. And I think a lot of that has been healed in this last, you know, couple of years. And it's cool to show other people that, hey, like, no matter how many times you've tried or how hopeless you feel, you may have just not found the right mix of tools. Like I added one thing that changed my life. And I'm not saying that's right for somebody else, but what you can do is sit down and look at every single tool. And that's what I do as a coach. Like I have a million tools in a toolbox. And like, have you tried this? Have you tried this with this? Well, do you like this, right? There's a mix that will work for you. There's something that'll work for you. You know, you're not the only person on earth who can't get sober. I doubt it, right? Like I thought that was me, but I just was missing one thing. Imagine I gave up.
Right. Imagine that. And, you know, your daughters wouldn't have a mother. Your parents wouldn't have a daughter, because people do get to that hopelessness and they end it. And we want to stand in that gap so that no one goes that far. And there is hope, because look at you. I mean, you were hopeless and now you have all this hope. So now that you have the clarity with your brain healing, you're able to see the neuroscience and all these other things that can work with the steps as you grow in your recovery, right?
I tell everybody I'm probably the biggest mixed bag you will ever see. I do a little bit of everything. Like my friend Laura, who you're talking about, she is the neuropsychotherapist on Instagram. She's like, the crazy girl who's into all of the like spirits and like, you know, the brain, and, you know, she does all of the like meditations and things like that. And she's like such a, almost like a modern hippie, right? So I totally love that, but I don't go as far as her, right? So I take a little bit of that. I take a little bit of therapy. I love the steps, right? But like AA as a whole wasn't always my favorite, but I definitely, without AA, I wouldn't be here today either, right? So I love the 12 steps. I have a lot of, you know, the old guys that I hated in the beginning when I walked into AA, like I hug them and love them now. So like there is so much, I guess, in my world now that like, that's why I say like, there is a toolbox of stuff, and people get so mixed up in saying like, AA doesn't work for me, or I don't do this, or I don't do that. And it's great if it doesn't work for you, but just try different things. Try, does this work? Or take what does work, right? Like, I've noticed that most programs, and it's so funny because a lot of people say like, I don't like AA, or I don't like this. Almost every single program or anything that I've seen people do to get sober is the same thing. It consists of the same thing. These people who are on Instagram and they don't use AA, they use a community. They have a higher power, and they do things with their body, mind, body, soul. So they're doing meditation, yoga, that type of stuff. They believe in some type of higher power. Their community is their group of girls on, you know, Instagram or Facebook. They are literally doing the same thing that AA is doing without the old guy in the back being super annoying. But listen, the old guy is super loving and amazing too.
And that's the cool thing. When you start learning these tools and stuff, it gets you to a place where you can go in these meetings and you can see that person that's been sitting there for 20 years, how mm-hmm. important it's been for him to be sitting there for 20 years. And it just opens up your eyes. And I'm like you. I mean, I'm Heinz 57 when it comes to recovery. I just walk along, and if I see something, check your pockets because I'm going to steal it. Right?
Yeah, no, 100%. I love it all. I love it all. Like I really do. And I'll mention this too, just because it was something that came up for me not long ago. I always thought I didn't have any trauma because, you know, I thought trauma was like big events, like say if you got raped or you got, you know, robbed or like literal, like Vietnam or something, right? I thought trauma was a huge event. And I was talking with a therapist. I had been to therapy before, but I'm very good at masking and I would just get through it, right? Like we would never go deep. We would never talk about anything. Usually when I was in rehab, we would talk about how I was going to do with my kids after or that type of thing, where I was going to live. Like I always was good at being just the regular girl. I never got in fights. I never, you know, they never had to worry about me, right? So I got away with never going deep. And I ended up talking to this therapist one day, and this was just like a few months ago, and she really like broke my life down and like my parents and my just everything and like some stuff that I had been through. And she was like, you really have a lot of trauma. Like, I can't believe you said that you don't have trauma. And we worked through a lot of that. And I can't tell you how much of a difference even that hour that day made for me. Because I used to go around saying like, I don't know what's wrong with me. Everybody else who has alcohol and drug problems, they have trauma and I don't have any. But trauma can be different things. And it's really about your response to things, right? And because I was such an anxious person, when things happened, it really was traumatic, right? And I guess that I just say that just to say that like, I never thought of doing like therapy or things like that. I thought I really didn't need it. But listen, having a baby at 16 years old and being in an abusive relationship is traumatic. Like there's a lot of stuff that I went through like that wasn't okay. But because I was always drinking and always using it and I was used to that life, I thought that was normal. Or I just, you know, they talk about like the frog in the hot water or whatever it is. Yeah. So there was a lot of that, like, no, that's trauma. And that was stuff that at 37 years old that I had never dealt with or even thought about, right? So I say that to you because that's something that can hold people back from getting sober.
So boom, man, you are this bright, shining light now. Share with all of us what you're doing in these sober spaces.
Well, so because I had been in the sober community before, I took my little break, I got sober, and I had my national certification for coaching and peer mentoring. And then I got my life coaching certification. So I just decided to open my own sober coaching business. And I've been doing that. It's been super amazing. And it's been healing even for me, right? Because when you help other people, you're helping yourself. And so I do sober coaching. I have a program that is coming out next month. So I'm super excited about that. There's a curriculum. And then there's like one-on-one coaching included and things like that. And it's just super amazing. So I have that. And then I do the podcast, right? Because I think that hearing people's stories and things like that, I think it helps a lot of people who are going through that. And maybe you see something in them that you see in yourself, and maybe it will be helpful to you. So I do the podcast, I do sober coaching, and then I got, you know, my day job.
Right. And then on top of your day job, you're also doing some Zooms to help people if they want to show up and have a meeting, right?
Yeah, we do a free Zoom meeting, which is a 12-step meeting, but it's not, anybody can come. It's not like, you know, you have to be AA specific or anything like that, but we do that meeting and that's been really cool too.
So you got to tell us the names of your sober coaching and your sober platforms, and then we'll put links to these in the blurb too at the end.
Yay. So my sober coaching business is called Controlled Chaos. I am on Instagram and really everywhere, either Shayna Epps or Controlled Chaos. I think like both of them are on everything. Yeah. And the podcast is Controlled Chaos too. It is anywhere that you listen to your podcast, you can find it. And also it's on YouTube under Controlled Chaos.
And then you're building a Facebook group too, Controlled Chaos Facebook group.
Yes, it is. My Facebook group is actually called Sisterhood of Sober Success. And that is just a women's group for people who are sober, sober curious, whatever. We kind of just help each other out. There's even some people in there that have family members and they're kind of wondering what to do. And we have some Al-Anon members in there. Like, it's crazy. You get people in these groups and there's so many resources.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. Yeah. I love it. I love it. I love bringing resources together. That's what Sobertown does. Try to bring everything under one umbrella where people can go in and fill their pockets with tools, right? Whatever it may be.
And I have to say, I've really appreciated that about you from the day that I talked to you. You have been like, how can I help you help people? And, you know, not everybody is like that. And for me, it's like as many resources as we can get people, that's what is the best. And the truth is that my people are my people are your people. Like, people are going to connect with me and they might connect with you for a different reason. They might come to some of your groups. They might come to some of mine. And I love the Heinz 57. So like, if you want to go to a little of mine, a little of your, hey.
Right. It works. Well, yeah. Like I told you before, you know, I've been trying to get sober for over 40 years, and that was only with the 12 steps. And because I've been to thousands of AA, NA, CA, but I just couldn't get it until I found out, hey, there's other tools that I can add to this. And there's so many parts of the steps that I love that I see that happen in my life organically. Like, I can look behind me and say, oh, wow, I just did, you know, a step forward without even trying, right?
Right.
Yeah, Shayna, it's just been a pleasure to see you. Keep doing your reels and everything that you're doing. And I loved it. We're going to be able to see you grow in your sobriety too, and with helping everybody. And we'll have to do some more later on too. So thank you so much.
All right. Bye-bye.